Hi.
Hey there. Oh no, we're seeing the regular green screen behind JJ. This must be a rough
Amateur
day.
era, the Asgard household.
It's true. Yeah, no, I brought it up and I'm dealing with emails right now, so no, this is a nice little
No one else is dealing with emails.
You know how difficult it is to
Is that
hit.
an excuse I can use to explain my green screen?
I mean, it's a lot of work to hit like choose virtual background and then select something. It's a bunch of
Yeah.
work.
I'm sorry I'm not ready for this meeting. I just had a ton of emails lately.
Oh,
It's
so many
true.
emails. It's
Oh,
true.
I couldn't get to making dinner tonight, Paul. Like I just so many
So
emails.
many.
Yeah.
Inbox zero over here. If I don't have inbox zero, I get all twitchy. So, gotta
Well,
go
aren't
through
you
it.
an inbox fucking hero? Hello and welcome to the Hallway Track. We are a trilingual podcast in which we, your hosts, Matt, JJ, and Paul, that's me, discuss technology, food, and whatever else is grinding our gears.
Was that written? That was solid.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
No, it was just something I thought I'd give a shot. It's actually just a piss take of what's the podcast where one guy explains a historical event to the other guy, and it's pretty funny.
Drunk history?
No. Oh my God. Why am I so bad at stuff?
Nova.
I mean, don't know where to start on that one, Paul.
Don't know where to start on that one. Yeah. No, you're right. The dollop.
The dollop. Oh, the dollop is
Oh,
really good. I
the
haven't
dollop
listened to
is
that in a
amazing.
while.
I learned all my important American historical events by listening to the dollop.
Give me a for instance there.
Let me think. I think they had a really good one on who's the president that all the Republicans think was the best president we ever had?
Reagan.
Lincoln.
Reagan. Yeah, they had a good
Oh.
one on Reagan. It was like a two.
Lincoln, JJ.
that's a
That's
that that's
what
a
people
car, you
want to
idiot.
believe. That's a car, you
Oh.
idiot.
Anyway.
Yeah, they had a really good two-part series on Reagan that turns out he was a fucking monster. Spoiler alert.
It's like the greatest understatement. Oh man. What a yeah.
Well,
Cool. Well, I'm glad you're getting indoctrinated via podcasts. I feel like that's a double American hobby. But unrelated to, well, actually quite related to Americanism and your knowledge. I heard there's a 90 eras fast food promo for kids. What's happening there?
Oh, I was just curious, like, what was, because like I feel like 90s era, like 90s was when like all the fast food outlets were just like trying to get kids to eat garbage and seemed to have like free rein to do so. Whereas I feel like that's been reined in and not so bad. So, I mean, obviously you had like the McDonald's Happy Meal, which I assume that still exists. They just put, I don't know, fucking carrots in instead of fries or something, right?
Apple slices, actually.
Apple
Apple
slices,
slices,
right?
yes.
Way cheaper. Yeah.
Way cheaper. And also
They're
like the
in a little
least healthy
bag.
of the fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, they actually ask you when you ask for a Happy Meal. And they're like, would you like milk or would you like a soda? Would you like apple juice or milk? And there's like a decision tree that they ask you to go down now.
Oh
And
man, so basically they
never.
just your kids hate you by the end of the decision tree, is what I'm
Well, no,
guessing.
you just learn to be like, no, give them a Sprite because you don't want caffeine, or maybe a root beer if you're feeling sassy. And then your chicken nuggets and fries. And oh yeah, it's for a girl. Because they're gendered too. Because they have a female version and a male version, which is very, very not gradient. It's like the boy one is all blue and the girl one's all pink. Believe it or not, when it comes to respectful, what's what I'm looking for? Happy meals or kids meals? Chick-fil-A of all places has the best gender neutral kids meals. I'm a
Well, isn't
dad.
that because they're like their toys are just like, I don't know, Jesus on the cross or
You know, no, they don't give away toys.
A ticket to a they give the books out. Camp or whatever it is that.
No, they give books out, which is really surprising. Like it's an act, and it's actually like they're not bad books. I mean, of course, they have a little bit of Jesus in them, but
that makes them bad books.
In general, they try to teach like good Christian.
If you're a good
values.
American, you already love Jesus, so it's redundant.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So. As a kid that grew up realizing real early I wasn't a good American for reasons I didn't fully understand, like this resonates with me. Yeah, I mean, they're good books. Every kid likes that in America.
Anyways, so in Australia, we had Pizza Hut had the Cool Kids Club. And if you were a member of the Cool Kids Club, they sent you a little ID card. And if you presented that when you went to dine in at the Pizza Hut restaurant, you would get a little like a special like cup with like a whatever cartoon character was featured, or you'd get a little toy of some sort. And so I don't know what made me think of that, but I was thinking about that and I like looked it up to remind myself what some of the toys and stuff was. And I was like, I wonder if they had Cool Kids Club in America or what what the American alternative was. Cause I'm sure
that was your DARE card. They give you a DARE card in fifth grade versus like, you're not going to do drugs. And that was a Cool Kids card. At least that's what my mom told me when I got it. And I realized that was not cool.
There's a card for that, man.
You didn't get it? Yeah, they give me a little black card with my. You can write your name in it. It says like whatever the DARE stands for. Was it drugged?
Are no, it's like really expensive. Resistance. I only remember that one. Drugs are really expensive.
There used to be like something resistance education, like drugs and alcohol resistance education. Right, DARE.
So close. Maybe?
Wow. But you know, they're still around.
What? I thought they got rid of that program.
It was a little while ago, and I'm sure it was there, but there was like some people at a like desk outside of somewhere at like a mall or something. And they were like seriously giving out like education pamphlets for, maybe it wasn't DARE, but it was basically the same thing.
Was that the McGruff the dog thing? Because I know that guy that cartoon appeared again recently.
I don't know who you're talking about.
I know exactly who you're talking about, but I thought DARE's got a lion, and I only know that because the picture's right in front of me, and it will make a great cover photo.
Oh, send it my way. I'll put it in right now.
Yeah.
Right.
Thank you. Priorities.
Well, that was exciting. Now, JJ, speaking of toys and being dedicated for specific genders, can we just have a quick shout out to fucking Tennessee and Texas for
being
the worst horrible fucking places on this earth right now? Yeah. Well, maybe not quite the worst, but they're pretty bad. So
I didn't know you could put bounties on laws in America, period. Like, you go into it, I'm just still blown away.
Well, hang on, what do you say? Tell me about this bounty thing. So let me give you what I know, and that is Tennessee has enacted a law in which if you allow people who identify with a gender with which they weren't born as to use the bathroom of their choice, you have to put up a sign basically to say that you're doing that to warn people that, I don't know, that horrible pedophiles are hanging out in your bathrooms or whatever it is that they think is happening. And so that's pretty bad because Tennessee basically said transgender people are not welcome here. And not just that, but people who don't identify as one gender or the other specifically, it really applies to them as well. That's not cool. And then like literally the day after, Texas is like, well, we're passing a law to say you can't choose that. You can't have an abortion after 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And if the provider can be sued by private individuals as well as the government. And I think that's a way to try and get around it not being constitutional, according to the like federal constitution.
I believe it was a fetal heartbeat, not a time, because
no, it's written as 6 weeks, and and it's called like the heartbeat bill, because that's the umbrella term going around the United States right now, and you could argue that the stuff is being dropped and like so aggressively so that it does go to the Supreme Court because it is a court that might overturn Roe v. Wade,
right?
Which would really do this. Yeah, so similar heartbeat bills have passed throughout the country. But what's so truly disturbing about this one, if you can only choose one thing from the litany of options, is that, like you were saying, Paul, that individuals are responsible and even are capable of enforcement and suing. And if they win, they will be given $10,000 in basically reparations for succeeding in suing somebody for getting an abortion. And that's something like, I didn't even know.
Wait,
you could do that.
One more time.
Let's say this is a scenario. I am sure. Your neighbor, JJ. Someone in your family gets an abortion. Mm-hmm. I sue you for that action under this law. That's step one. That is the base premise of it. I can just sue you for, if I find out that your family had an abortion, if it turns out to be true that it happened after 6 weeks, which, by the way, for those not capable of carrying a child, the minute you find out, the earliest you can find out you are pregnant is about 5 weeks. You're immediately tagged as 5 weeks because you start counting it from the last day of the person's period. So you're already 4 to 5 weeks out by the time you can get a positive test. So it's most people don't find out until about 6 weeks. So if we find out that the person in your household did have an abortion after 6 weeks, then I will get paid by the state $10,000 for successfully suing you.
So you've just described like a movie I swear I've seen, right? Where, you know, this is Handmaid's a horror Tale? Movie. No. Well, true. All right. Good point.
But keep going. My bad.
I'm trying to be funny about this, but I realize it's not really something you should be joking about as I say this out loud. But I immediately think of like BSG or Battlestar Galactica when Starbuck got abducted and then, you know, she goes to the farm or whatever. Like if I can get paid $10,000 from the state and I find out about this, there's so much like, why aren't you just suing everybody?
Well, that's right? What they want. That's what they're looking for. They're looking to like encourage people to snitch.
But you that'll just gum up the. No, like I can.
JJ, like don't try and make it make sense inside your head because it won't. Yeah. Because there's nothing sensible about any part of it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, should I just find out what I don't.
So what you need to do, JJ, is you need to organize and you need to motivate and you need to get these motherfuckers voted out of wherever it is that they're serving. So there was a photo of them signing the legislature, and it was so I guess the Texas legislature, and like there was probably 100 people in the photo. There was 100 of them were white, and probably 98 of them, maybe 94 of them were men. And that's probably a good thing to look at as you wonder why we get to a place that we're passing laws like this, because there is zero useful diversity.
Well, if I remember correctly, a buddy of mine tweeted out, and I think I retweeted it too, is 20 years ago to the day, Ann Richards, in the exact same kind of photo shot, was surrounded by women and giving more... stronger rights to women's stronger women's rights. Yeah, let's go with that. Which is a really weird dichotomy of if you put those two pictures together. And it was pretty crazy. It's just, we're not supposed to be going this way. We're supposed to be going the other way, right? Like society's supposed to be moving forward, not backward.
Yeah.
Right?
No? Agreed.
Yeah. And it's definitely a thing where I feel like the more right-wing the state, the more of a reaction they're having to like the Biden presidency and like just doubling down and tripling down on their bullshit. Because they got this dwindling base of old white dudes and they're desperate to hold on to that base. Like they're not trying to get, they're not even trying to build a new base, you know, appeal to new people. They're just like doubling down on what they have.
They're not getting another base.
Yeah, you know, I guess it's like, in a lot of ways, no. It's like.
Yes. Thank you, Robert.
JJ, that's no. Yes. I saw, I'll mark it as an attempt. Proud of you.
Yeah. Working on it.
Yeah.
Anyways. So what else we got to talk about?
Probably not more politics. I don't think we're that kind of show. One fun thing to, we had the shot, let's get the chaser. I really want to make some fried chicken. And I'm going to make it tomorrow night. I've got good friends coming to town. It's supposed mm-hmm. to be raining, so I didn't want to be grilling something. So right. I've got some chicken and I'm wondering, you mentioned buttermilk chicken multiple times, Paul. And right. I'm just like, I did one of those things where Paul said a bunch of words. I bought a bunch of stuff and I mm-hmm. don't know what thing to use in what order. I have tapioca flour, is it? Or is it tapioca starch? I've got sweet potato flour. I've got regular flour, corn starch. I've got a ton of shit. I mm-hmm. don't know what to do in what order. What comes all right. to mind?
So what style of chicken do you want? Do you want like the American country style fried chicken? Or do you want more like the like Korean fried or the like or the Japanese like style, which is, you know, with the panko type? Breadcrumbs.
Great question. I'd lean Korean, I think, right. but I just want it to be nice and crunchy, have yep. some good flavor to it. I'm open.
So here's what I would suggest. Did you get buttermilk?
Not yet.
Okay. So skip the buttermilk, get some regular milk, like low fat's totally fine, like skim milk, whatever. Mix that with some good quality like vinegar based hot sauce.
Okay.
Because really with the thing with buttermilk is you're getting like the milk, so the proteins and stuff from the milk, but you're getting also the vinegar from the fact that it's you know, fermented a little bit or whatever and gone acidic.
Right.
Right. So you replace that with something that's actually pretty flavorful, which is like hot sauce, right? And then you'll add some salt. You want like, I think about a 2% salt is kind of your general brine thing, right? I usually use a couple of tablespoons of like a good quality barbecue rub, because then you get some interesting flavors in there other than just the straight salt, but you can just use straight salt. So that's that. You marinate it in that anywhere from, you know, an hour to 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go to your batter. And so I would start with a fairly simple three part regular flour to one part starch. So that could be cornstarch, potato starch, tapioca starch. And what that will do is, so the starch will give you a lot of crispiness. But if you use just starch, especially on larger pieces of chicken, it ends up like almost too crispy.
How and dare
so,
you?
And so the ratio that seems to work really well is three parts plain flour, one part starch. Then you want to add a bit of baking powder to it. So you could use self-raising flour and that already has baking powder in it, or you can add some baking powder. I don't care about exact numbers, like a tablespoon or so, like whatever makes sense to you. And then I'll then add some more seasoning to it. So again, I usually just reach for a good barbecue rub, preferably with one without sugar, because you don't really need to be adding sugar into something you're gonna fry, because it's just gonna cause it to brown faster.
Right.
And maybe over-browned. So whatever's going there. You can also reach for, like, if you've got like Chef Boyardee or any of those like Slap Your Mama or any of the kind of Cajun type seasoning mixes, they work great. Mix that through the flour and then put a bit of that flour aside and then mix water like ice water into the rest of it until you get a fairly thin, runny batter. And then you'll dip the bread in the regular flour, like that you put aside, just to get it a very light coating on it. And that helps the wet batter stick to it. And then you'll put it in the wet batter. And you can put it all in, like in the wet batter, in like a big Ziploc bag and get it all prepped in that, ready to go. And then when it's ready to fry it, get your fryer up to, you want 320, you want your oil to be, and you do a first fry and you don't care about color. In fact, you don't really want color. You just want to get the chicken cooked through. So depending on your meats, if it's mostly white meats, I try not to go above 145. Right. If it's leg and thigh meat, I'll go to like 175 to make sure it's like super, super juicy and cooked well and tender, because the darker meat has a lot of collagen and stuff to break down.
Mm-hmm.
But
you go up to 175? I thought one. Okay. Yeah.
So 165 is the USDA approved safe temperature. I'm not so bothered by that, because the actual chances of getting something from the chicken is pretty low. But also, the 165 is, the moment it hits 165, it's good. Whereas at a lower temperature, it's got to stay at that temperature for longer.
Yeah.
So no. Generally, but when you're frying something, by the time it gets to like 145, it's been at like in the range of killing the bacteria long enough that you're safe.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, it's the time to temperature, and exactly. USDA just says like they want it in like sub 1 second temperature range so that you can't sue them, or like there's less worry for novice. But yeah, I'm fine with that. I was just surprised like the 175, since that's over for the dark meat.
Yeah, and like you can stop right at 165, but like there's a lot of room for error. Right. So you could even go to like 200 and it's probably fine.
Right.
So yeah. Like the main thing is that it's first of all safe to eat and it's pleasant to eat. Right. So for white meat, I don't like going much above 145 because it can get quite tough. And then the opposite for dark meat is you want it to go above it because it tenderizes it. So you do that first fry. And you do it in batches. You don't want to crowd your pan. You don't want to reduce your temperature too much when you put it in.
Right.
After that first fry, as you're doing it, just put it on like a wire rack on an oven rack. So there's like the oil can just drip off. I don't like doing it on a paper towel, because you basically, anything that comes off into the towel is just like being held against the.
Yeah, it's like a wet diaper on it instead of, air drying. Yeah.
Yeah. Not that. Like, so oil on crispy fried stuff doesn't actually make it go soggy. So right. It's not that big a deal. But what happens is often some juices from the chicken and stuff will get through the batter and will also sit on that damp towel. And that's where it gets a bit ugh. Once you've fried it all, crank the fryer up to 350, 360 if you're feeling a little bit spicy. And then you do a second fry. And that second fry is all about setting the crisp and getting the color. And that's just to eyeball.
Cool.
And then once it comes out of that, a quick dusting of extra salt while it's still hot and while it's still a little bit oily, and you're golden. And then you can talk about sauces and stuff as a whole nother topic.
Right, right. Fun as hell. Okay. I probably got like 30% of that. I'll
re-listen because of the same reason.
Yeah, cool.
So is that the reason the 100 downloads is you and me just re-listening to Paul tell us stuff?
Yeah, we're just trying to learn how to cook the thing that Paul told us.
It's like exactly. The YouTube chefs who get all the views because everyone has to watch them exactly. Every single time because they don't have a written recipe.
Yeah, that's a real dick punch. But hey, maybe that's how we inflate the show numbers. I'm into it.
And hey, some people are into dick punches.
Yeah,
we don't kink shame on this show.
No, you kink as you wish. Just don't punch me in the dick. Maybe that's our new tagline. Speaking of very confusing taglines, what's polywork? And should I sign up for the wait list?
Isn't it LinkedIn for cool kids now? Or am I wrong on that?
I think it's somewhere between like Noticed and LinkedIn.
Okay.
So I complained enough on Twitter that someone sent me an invite and I set it up and it was a bit kludgy to set up. It had classic early stage app, like UX blunders. Like there's a little pop-up with a form. And as you fill out the form gets longer and longer until it no longer fits inside the pop-up. And then you can't actually hit the submit button, which was fun. But you basically set it up and your end result is you have a picture of you, you have your bio, a list of places you've worked and a list of things you've done. But it looks cooler than LinkedIn. I guess there's no recruiting stuff that's supposed to happen on there. So you're not going to be scanned by recruiters. It's like a kind of a good way to just show off who you are and what you do. And there are some options there to say, hey, I'm interested in making certain types of connections. Like if you're interested in sitting on boards of nonprofits, or if you're interested in, being contacted to help with doing beta testing of other people's software, some stuff like that.
Nice.
So I don't know. It might be a useful place to, because I use Noticed, which is a service to basically, hey, this is me and here's all the public presentations I've given. I could probably replace that with this. And you can actually provide a custom domain and have it show up on your own domain versus the Polywork domain, which you can do with Noticed as well. So, I would say they're pretty similar to like the end result of a person looking at your profile.
Oh, these are like the .me profiles from years ago. Like,
right.
And it seems like people are trying to creep in on LinkedIn and... Mm-hmm. I mean, they're poking at real flaws that in the user experience for some, where you're just overwhelmed with recruiter spam, or you don't feel like you can share some of your more creative work on top of that. But I don't know. Like, I guess maybe to check in with the 300-pound gorilla of the room of LinkedIn. Do either of you use it or care to use it?
Not really. I mean, every once in a while, I'll go in and like clear out all the notifications and reject a bunch of recruiter spam and stuff. But I don't use it. I know people that use it pretty aggressively to like promote the things they do and content that they're building, which I should be doing, but I just struggle to have the spoons to do that.
Mm.
My relationship with LinkedIn is tenuous at best. I have a personal rule that I have to know who you are for me to like connect with you. Like if I see your picture and I have no idea who you are, I'm definitely going to reject the invitation, which is kind of weird because, it's like, I get it. People are trying to communicate with me and that's how you connect with them, is through that to communicate, but it's still weird. And I make sure to say inside my actual LinkedIn profile is that I don't accept messages through LinkedIn. You need to email me at this email address. So the whole goal was, if you care enough to find me, you've read through this thing. Now you realize that you should be able to email me at this link, so I know that you're coming from LinkedIn or whatever. But I actually found a power user of LinkedIn a long time ago and asked him for some advice on how to use it. And he TLDR'd the whole thing by saying, JJ, what you got to think of it is, it's a public contact Rolodex. I think he actually used the term Rolodex. And you'd be amazed on who you can find on there and who you can connect to. So when you're trying to build business relationships, if you accept everyone, and that one person is like one person away from that person you're trying to find, you'd be amazed on how quickly you can get to that person. He was in channel sales, so it makes
you think.
it made sense, right? But he was also like, JJ, for what you do in this world, obviously you don't need these things. But if you ever do go into this world, it's ripe for the picking.
So I would suggest that it is useful for people like us, because I see folks that do use it well, and they get a lot of like click-throughs and views of content they put on there. And that always looks good for your DevRel metrics that you're supposed to care about.
I guess that's true.
And supposedly the like the short videos on LinkedIn do really well, as well, if not better than, say, doing the short videos on Twitter.
TikTok, you mean? That. I only do videos TikTok, on TikTok, right. Yeah. but yeah. It took me a long time to learn how to use Twitter, and I just can't let it go. Like, I finally understand how to use it, and I'm like, I'm not going to go through a whole nother thing. But sorry, Robert, you were saying?
Oh, no, you're good. I just really enjoy trying out new features of products, even if I don't want to like them. And yeah, I've been tooling around with LinkedIn. It also helps that, so I went from open source centric as my day job to architect centric and architecture. And people at that level in their career and that sort of focus, they're hanging out more on LinkedIn. Like, that's to the best of my ability to, you know, navigate towards like where that audience is. Not on Twitter as often, not chilling on, I mean, maybe on Facebook, but I don't care. I don't want to use that for work. But LinkedIn is the place where I can go and meet people that way. So I've been sharing a lot of articles that I'm reading or writing on there. And it's strangely effective for connecting with people. But like, I do end up going back to it. Like when I'm like, who's that person I met at, you know, LinuxCon 2019, and we ran into each other at the coffee station and talked for a bit. I didn't even get their last name. I don't know what company they're working at, or it's probably a different one. Yeah, like exactly. I messaged you on LinkedIn, and that's how we became friends. That's not at all true. But it is really helpful. They actually removed a feature I really loved, that when you clicked on someone's profile that you're connected with, it told you the date that you connected with them, and if there was a message from like when you connected. And I felt like that contextual cue was really handy. But now I use it on the daily right now for work, and there's definitely a bunch of spam. People think I'm like a cloud architect that they want to hire, and they will be very disappointed if they did. But if you put that junk aside, it's still a great place to connect with people that aren't Twitter fluent.
Right. Now, you know, one thing that you shouldn't use LinkedIn for? Messaging dating women that you met at conferences to try and take out on a date. Probably don't do that, guys.
It's so freaking creepy.
Ugh.
And I think the gaslighting you see when, if you are listening and you haven't seen one of those messages, or and you're like, no, that can't be real. That sounds so awful. It's real. And basically every woman or non-binary person that presents as female, on Twitter, like, they are getting some really gross messages on, regardless of what channel it is. And then people gaslighting, like, oh, I wasn't hitting on you. I just said that you're beautiful and wanted your number. And you're just like, that's hitting on people, right? You annoying son of a bitch. So, yeah, that's terrible. Terrible choice in life.
Yeah, so just pro tip. There's this Paul's pro tip of the day.
There you go.
Don't try and use LinkedIn or Twitter or any of those places as a dating site. Just don't do it.
There are apps for that.
Yeah,
you can use those. What else, folks? What's on your minds?
I feel like this has been a pretty exciting week on tech news, and we don't talk about tech stuff all that much. JJ, I know that you love your 90s technology, so why don't you tell us what the fuck is going on with Freenode?
Okay. Yes.
We're out of time. Great job. Thanks, everyone.
There you go. Let's wave off on this one. But no, so okay. What I've pieced together And there's a couple good articles out there now, and Broberg's going to obviously correct me on a lot of these things, but that's fine. The short of it is, first of all, the generally IRC is near and dear to my heart. That is how I learned how to involve myself in the open source communities back in pre-college and college days.
Is that back when you were running Windows 3.11 and connecting using winsock32.dll and running MIRC?
MIRC. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, I know who you are.
Slap him with a fish.
I see you, JJ. I see you.
Exactly. I learned a lot through that ecosystem, so it's near and dear to my heart. Freenode has been part of that world since I started. Let's just go with that. And over the last week, every single staff member, who are all volunteers, has resigned from Freenode. And what has happened is, yes, the Crown Prince of Korea. Yes,
wait,
the Crown.
Korea has a Crown Prince?
Exactly. That's the first weirdness of this. Owns the...
And hang on, just one quick question. What the fuck is a crown prince versus a regular prince?
So I think he's actually in line to become king.
Okay.
Right? He's not actually king yet. I think that's how it works.
This is way outside my correcting JJ zone. Let's get back to IRC.
the Crown Prince of Korea owns a company called Freenode Live? Or Freenode Lights, something along those lines. I should have the article up, but I'm just going off of memory right now. And he owns the domains. And he bought them from an acquisition a handful of years ago. And the short of it is he finally decided he wants to use the Freenode.net, Freenode domains for something else. Needless to say, he saw all these community members on the IRC ecosystem, and you can actually see the chats that he has with they've published them all. And it's basically what is the term, the chickens came home to roost, where he basically says, this is mine now. I want to do this with it. And I need to like block these people. So he basically came down with a hammer. And Freenode has been famous for being open source. Of course, there's, you know, they get rid of, there's good code of conduct involved, but he came down using it as his kind of his kingdom, if you will. He is a prince, of course. That was supposed to be a joke.
I would be a prince himself.
Hey, nice. So that's what's happened. So everyone basically got up, upstaked 25 years of community building and moved something over to called Libra Chat, which is based out of Switzerland and is a nonprofit. There's more crazy.
Did they build Libra Chat or did it already exist?
They built it. The nonprofit built it.
They made a new server. It's still, so we're still talking IRC as the protocol, like the messaging protocol, but like every IRC system, it's funny, JJ, like my experience in IRC is so not in the nuance of it that I always associated with Freenode as IRC, and that might be something other listeners are doing here, but IRC can be hosted by any server, and the largest by far and one of the longest running for any measurement of uptime has been Freenode. But so anyway, a new one is available, which I just want to make that distinction, because if you're not in the nuance, that could be pretty confusing.
So Freenode is where all the open source projects kind of landed, Freenode.net. There's also another one called ElfNet and OFCNet, I think. Those are the three main ones that were kind of like the collection places. And I think there was even a QuakeNet at some point where Quake gamers would come together to be able to talk and play Quake when it was multiplayer at the time. But yes, you're right. IRC is just a protocol that you can run very easily on a Raspberry Pi. It really requires very little overhead to run. And it was just a great, easy way at the time when we were all on ISDN lines and dial-up to be able to communicate in a synchronous manner. Asynchronous, like Slack nowadays, you would have to create something called a bouncer to do that. And it required a lot more like engineering. But the idea was, is you can actually hop in. And the OpenStack community really, really, really embraced Freenode and IRC to work through their Big Ten programs. And that was actually really important for the projects I was involved in, because IRC is not blocked in China, if you didn't know this. And because granted, I guess you can connect via SSL or SAL, whatever it's called now, HTTPS, sure, let's go with that. But the interesting part is that the normal one wasn't blocked in China. It was just plain text going through. So I was actually able to work with engineers in the OpenStack community in China in real time using IRC, which right now is still pretty hard through all the other avenues, but IRC was allowed, which was allowed. So that was interesting.
So basically what you're saying, that IRC was Slack for geriatric millennials.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And newborn millennials, is that the next generation? I don't know. We're hanging out on Matrix servers.
My actual diabetic support group was built off of IRC. And I had people from all over the world in a support group in IRC I still have friends to this day. I think, Chris, if you're actually listening, I'm calling you out, buddy.
Chris.
Yeah, he's a good dude. He's a good dude.
He's the best.
It was how I met him. And I mean, on my travels as DevRel, I've got to fly around the world and I've got to actually have real beers with him, which was, I always thought was really cool.
Yeah. So in Australia, the big IRC network of the day was oz.org. So you would connect to irc.oz.org.
I thought it was pigeons. Pigeons flying with mess because he's in Australia. They don't have internet in Australia. They have
first of all, pigeons. There weren't pigeons down there. It was African or European. They have cassowaries, which are way cooler birds than any other continent.
Okay.
Look up a cassowary if you want to see living dinosaurs.
Right.
Okay. Noted.
But God damn it, JJ, if you're going to refer to Monty Python, you're going to do it right.
But is he?
No.
I'm not. So let me tell you about Vin Diesel and Fast and Furious 9. No? Okay. I made Brobig sad.
The original Fast and the Furious movie was actually, the script was written on IRC.
Nice. Nice.
That's giving me that look.
You sly devil, that look. Oi. It wouldn't be a recent show without mentioning how Haig continues to double down, or Basecamp continues to double down on
so good
coming get it making their way through the storm. How Paul, you say this, it hurts.
You know, you just have to bear with it. When you're right, you're right. And you just have to bear through the storm. These fucking guys. So there's a new blog out from David Heiserberg Hansen III, or whatever his name is. It's a really difficult, stressful time for everyone at Basecamp. And he links a bunch of blog posts by Jason, the founder of the company. When he's talking about it being a really difficult, stressful time for everyone at Basecamp. So clearly the people he's asking about are a very small minority of, as in just the founder of. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's been stressful for him. It's been more than stressful for most of the other employees, given that like literally half of them or more quit. But don't worry, we've been regrouping, hiring new colleagues, and we've been continuing to operate our services without a hitch. We've got a great team in place and everyone has been helping out wherever needed. There was only a small uptick of cancellations for Hay during the first tumultuous week, but been more than offset by an increase in new customer signups for Basecamp. And now both products are growing like they were before that difficult week. So, like, all's well that ends well.
All's well that ends well.
Everything's coming up, Milhouse.
I've been busy with some other stuff, but it's a really healthy reminder to cancel, hey, before it renews at the end of the year.
Jesus Christ.
It's such a shame. It's a decent mailbox, but you know what? Every time I email people now...
Sorry, did you say inbox?
Inbox, yeah, with an N. Because I use Hey is for Horses. Shameless plug. But it's a decent tool, but it's one of those things where, like, every time I email somebody now, all I can think of is, like, they will think of these assholes.
Hasn't someone created an open source fork of Hey yet with that algorithm? Because, I mean, if you've used it enough, it's probably figured stuff out for you. Can't we just, like, create an open source fork of that interface? Or no?
Oh, like the ability to either filter in or filter out?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about building... So there's a really cool tool chain... To make a file that is the codification of your filters and labels in Gmail. And I forget the tool. It was written in Go. It's its own DSL, so it's a bit of a beast, but once you wrap your head around it, like, you can make sure you have like provable filters and not have these things that fall in between with regexes. Which has always been something that is a little panicky about overly filtering things. But I feel like that tool with the construct of the filter in and out and the, is it in the paper trail or is it in your M box or is it in the other thing on the side that they have there? Like, I really do like that construct. Like, it's a good way to navigate the deluge of crap if you've ever bought anything on the internet. So I wonder if there's a way to, I know there's a way to put it together in Gmail, but, like, I can't think. I was hoping not to give all my data to Google forever. So
I think JJ has a solution for us. So the first thing we need to do is set up a postfix IRC server in Maildir mode. And then we need to set up a Mavis D spam assassin front end for that. And then we can use we can start using spam assassin rules and a Mavis rules to, like, start filtering content even before it hits that Maildir.
You're speaking my love language.
You can connect to it using like Horde Imp or what was the other one? Squirrel Mail or Roundcube. You can bring your own PHP webmail app. We don't even care.
Hey, you forgot the one level on top of it. You have to run Emacs with the built-in database to identify your whole Maildir, so you have instant searching on it too.
You raise a valid point.
I've never felt so young when you guys are only like 2 years older than me.
So actually, JJ, you know what we could do? We could do a web-based shell console and have it automatically load Pine.
Oh, good call.
And then we've just got like Pine managing our email, so email
done and done
inside of, well, not inside of Internet Explorer, but inside of your other browser of choice, because Internet Explorer is finally that's going great, right? EOL.
Oh yeah. See that? Well, that's IE 11. It's only IE 11 is going away. Isn't there an IE 12?
I think it's Mozilla Firefox that retweeted and said, rest in peace, sweet prince.
Sweet prince, good night. Sweet prince, good night.
Sweet prince, good night. It was just so beautiful.
It really was.
Can you please not make that service? like JJ, I don't know what you have planned for the rest of your day, but don't do that.
Oh, you know what we could do? And this will make it ultimate service. We'll also connect it to your IRC feed. So you'll get an always-on IRC connection, and you'll also be able to filter your IRC messages with the same rules that you're filtering your emails.
You've described a perfect business. It's a perfect business.
I don't think I've ever seen Matt quite so angry.
Yeah,
it's not angry. It's just like...
I don't know what that emotion is, but...
It's her disappointment?
He's like, he's both gone bright red and also white as a ghost at the same time.
Well, it's just, any sense? This is like when empathy and product mindset hit me like two freaking punches to each side of my head at the same time. I'm just empathizing with the user of your system just makes me want to barf.
I feel like we were doing like product design based on like slash dot threads or something.
It's true.
Yeah. Google, tell me the top 10 threads on Slashdot in 2004. Go.
Is Slashdot still a thing?
It is.
I think so.
It's wow. it's still really, really active. Did you know they're selling, you can actually buy on the secondary market lower IDs for Slashdot to take them over? So you have higher.
So good.
Yeah. I mean, that's when I found out there's also a secondary market for Reddit users too, which I didn't realize. Yeah. I mean, I guess fake internet points mean something now, I guess.
Yeah. I think
always have, always will.
Any popular service that has like a numeric ID or like a public like display name that's like locked to a user, you get that secondary market. And that secondary market is often powered by like people doing weird things to hack people out of their like three-letter Twitter username or whatever.
Absolutely. Well, now I'm just going through Slashdot, so this isn't good. I should probably not do that.
Oh, tell us the top thread on Slashdot right now.
I was just looking at System76 coming out with an open source interface to a keyboard. So, because you know what I want to do in my free time? Troubleshoot code on why I can't type a key on my keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of infinite loop I want in my day.
Exactly. It's the same. So that's the exact same argument I make when they're like, JJ, don't you use open source stuff with your insulin pump? I'm like, I'm an open source developer. I know how this shit is made. Fuck no. Like, yeah. I would not put something that my life relied on in open source right now. I mean, granted, okay, but for me, right? Like, I get other people do, but that's just the joke being is that I know all software is horrible, right? Like, all software.
I mean, pull requests accept it right into your spleen.
Exactly.
Well, okay, so there's
come on, you're not going to correct me that it's the pancreas that's the problem.
It's not even your pancreas on. Too, man. It's an autoemmune system
see
problem.
There were so many levels of correction you could have made. You just let it rot, right?
Yeah,
you're not going to go far in the white man podcasting world if you're not going to jump in and correct people when they're partially
I haven't
wrong.
Heard one well actually.
Yeah.
But on the, so open source around insulin, like if your pump isn't being maintained correctly by the people creating it, like hell freaking yes, I'd use an open source tool where I could see the diff between those things. I'd say open source on a keyboard for me sounds like it's solving a problem I don't have. And it is like the free for the sake of freedom kind of argument of it potentially that just isn't my jam. I'm so glad people like that. Godspeed. Like if you want to, you want to hang out and know every last piece of software you touch is open source, like that's cool. I think what I've always been attracted to about the premise of open source software is just the practicality of, you know, the first thing that was discussed was getting open source access to a printer so that someone could write a better driver in, because there was a compatibility issue with the operating system and the printer. And I love that world where like there's an intersection of proprietary and open source, and open source is an enabler to those two things working better together. I'm not an all or nothing, like everything must be open or we've somehow lost freedom. Like that is not a reality I plan to see in this world. And that's okay with me.
You don't run Weaver Boot on your laptop?
I hate to tell you, I do not.
And some NixOS in there too?
You know,
NixOS is pretty neat. Their package manager is very attractive.
I have the Libre stuff on my laptop, but that's because it's a work laptop that's managed by Red Hat. So of course you're going to have Libre on there.
Yeah, I guess
but thankfully we use all of the Google stuff for real work. So I don't know why it's really there.
Yeah, but that's also what I like about working at Red Hat. Like, I feel like we're really practical around the, use of open source, but also use the better tool when there's a better one. I don't have to keep notes in Etherpad.
Etherpad. Oh my God.
And your Emacs. I'm sick of fucking Emacs. It's a terrible, terrible interface to the world unless you like were born into it. Like use VI once and Emacs is just incomprehensible.
Yeah, it's true. You're
but Etherpad,
is
it, like.
Is JJ like the bane of Emacs? Like he was born into the darkness. the rest of us just adopted it.
Yeah. I don't get JJ sometimes because I just don't have the right key bindings.
There you go.
I mean, it's even worse because it's all Dvorak key bindings. It's not even a regular keyboard.
It's true.
Dvorak on a keyboard with no fucking letters on the buttons.
Dvorak, it's better for your wrist, Paul.
It is. Helped my shoulder. Helped my shoulder a lot. It's great.
Oh my God.
By the way, when did we turn into a Red Hat company recruiting podcast? I just want to kind of mention that because it's been pretty regular now that we're like, oh, that's one reason why I love working at Red Hat. Red Hat's great. Can we get sponsorship maybe?
Just saying. God, no. No. Actually, cut that part out of the episode. I don't want people associating the two together. My job does not pay me to dick around with you fools.
You know, he's not going to edit that out. He's not going to edit what you just said.
I know. I know that. Paul.
I know who he is.
I know what I signed
There's
up
no
for.
No surprises.
Quality control is not our forte.
It's really not.
For those
that would be quality cuddle.
Nice. There's a title.
That was perfection.
I think on that note, we can't get any higher.
No, but for the sweet princes that have listened to us and princesses that have survived to this, what are you cooking this weekend? I already talked about chicken. How about you, Paul?
Yeah, I have some bacon on the cure. So it's been on the cure since about this time last week. So I will probably fire up the smoker. I think tomorrow's pretty busy, so I won't try and smoke and work at the same time. But on probably Saturday, since we're going to have a pretty miserable weekend weather-wise with rain and storms, it'll be a good excuse to fire up the smoker and, you know, keep warm and make bacon.
Making bacon. How about you, JJ?
Yeah, I promised CZ a loaf of bread a few times. I'm finally going to get it done, and it will be appearing in the rain sometime this weekend because I finally got enough flour to make it happen. So I promised myself I was going to get it done.
You finally got it? There's a flour shortage? What's going on?
No, I just keep going through it, and I keep using it for other stuff, and I'm like, but I finally got like 10 pounds extra than I normally have.
10 so, pounds. Wow. Yeah. Solid. Nice work. Yes. I'm surprised you're not buying the bulk like baker's bags of the fancy baker's King Arthur flour.
Yeah. I started looking into that whole world too. And I don't have quite the throughput I need for that yet. But I'm getting dangerously close to it. I might've actually found a buddy of mine here in Austin who is doing, boutique coffee roasting where he gets he does boutique coffee roasting now. So he's willing to trade me weekly a loaf of bread and he'll give me a mason jar of boutique coffee roasted beans and we can just do a straight trade.
Is this just a random dude or is it someone actually doing it for business?
He's thinking about going into business for it. He's just kind of he sells it to a handful of people right now. But he hasn't quite gotten to the point where he can like be like advertised or anything. But there might actually be a legit like barter going on here soon.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sounds legit. Well, good. Thank you all for listening.
Thanks for bearing with us. It's been a rough one.
Yeah, it's an off week. Yeah. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.